But that made them more like a criminal gang than a group of twisted fundamentalists. They were an enigma she had to solve. "So when are we seeing Kara?" she asked. Tree's surprise was obvious. His extra Leku twitched in annoyance because she'd found out something he'd believed was a secret. Perhaps concealing something from a Jedi had given him a sense of power. Either way, his brief display of petulance did nothing to endear him to Lannery. "Don't worry. I didn't pluck her name from your mind."
"I know," Tree said, trying to smile again. "So where did you hear about her?"
"I have my sources." It would do no harm to let Tree think he was not her only contact on Kalamar.
"I spoke to her people earlier, as I said I would," Tree said, "before the bastard took a shot at me. She'll see us at midnight."
"Where?"
"You don't know everything about her, then?"
Tree said, confidence restored a little. "Only her name and where she lives."
"And never leaves. Rumor has it she hasn't left her apartments in 13 years.
"Why?"
"She can't. Come on. Time to introduce you to some Kalamar culture. It's close to where she lives. We can kill a couple of hours."
Lannery didn't like his turn of phrase, but she followed as he led the way, always on guard, keeping her mind open, listening and sniffing for trouble. She sensed plenty. But for now, none of it was for them. The Pits was aptly named. A subterranean tavern deep beneath one of Rahul Yon's more salubrious quarters. It displayed more than anything Lannery had yet seen of the mix of cultures, people, and philosophies that existed on Kalamar. She had heard of gladiatorial combat on Nox, and once on one of Maurer's moons. Visiting the Jedi recluse Nalander, she had witnessed the results of a contact knife fight. Nalander had told her that the fights were often arranged for money or standing, and that the losers did not always survive. On such an outpost as Maurer and its moons, this had not surprised her. On Nox, such brutality was commonplace. But she'd believed Kalamar was better than that. More settled. More civilized. On the surface only, it seemed. Even as they descended the freestanding, spiraling staircase that led down through a large, poorly lit cavern, the scent of violence, excitement, and desperation reached her. Human sweat, Kravaki must, the sweetness of a Sith's blood. The smells filled the cavern, rising on wafts of noxious heat from the tumult below. The tavern was built across the cavern floor, 30 meters beneath the streets. Its focal point was a deep trough in the floor, a natural pit in which two combatants fought. One was a big human with an extra set of arms grafted on his hips. The other was a Wookiee, pelt patchy, hide lacerated, and around his neck was a heavy control collar, lights flickering as electrical pulses urged him into greater fury. His screams were as much of pain as anger. He carried a metal-studded club, and it was already glistening with scraps of the human's flesh. "This is culture?" Lannery asked as they descended the last curve of staircase.
"The ass end of it," Tree said. "You grow used to it. They use mostly criminals and murderers. That's what they say, anyway. I try not to question it."
He glanced back at her, and his three Leku touched and turned, telling her, "A good place to remain anonymous." As much as she hated to admit it, that was probably more true than even Tree knew. Because not only was the Pits filled with all manner and race of people, it was also somewhere that leveled everyone. Every patron was here for the drink and the fight. A person not riled up, drunk, and filled with bloodlust would stand out. It would be easy for Lannery to see anyone following them. They reached the floor, and Tree shouldered his way to the nearest bar. There were several placed around the pit, and most were doing brisk business. Lannery followed, senses alert, hand on her hip close to her sword. A thud. A gargled scream and a shout. Hands waved and the crowd roared. Betting chips were illuminated, and across the other side of the pit, several gambling pods were rushed as people went to claim their winnings. Lannery had no desire to see, but still she stood on tiptoes to look down into the pit.
The Wookiee was leaning against one wall with blood caking his ragged beard. For a moment, she thought he was the loser. But then a mechanical arm swung down and speared the human's corpse, hauling it out, swinging it over the heads of the crowd, and flinging it into shadows at the cavern's extremes. She heard a splash, and then a frenzy of movement as unseen creatures made short work of the vanquished. She closed her eyes and breathed deeply. Every decent shred of her Jedi self wanted to close this place down, and her very basic human side wanted only to leave. But this was an easy place to cast her senses around, and every mind she touched was transparent to her. Base emotions flooded the pits. Unpleasant emotions, true, such as she had learned to control many years ago during her Jedi training, but simple to read for any threat or sense of being observed. Tree nudged her arm and handed her a drink.
Not the best wine on Calamar.
You surprise me. She took the glass and looked around. You come here often?
No,
Tree said. Perhaps that was disgust in his voice. These places are allowed?
Tolerated. They channel aggression, and the Council of Rahol Yon welcomes that. So they turn a blind eye.
How civilized, Lannery said. You really are an inclusive society.
It's not my society. I just come here from time to time.
He took a sip.
Anyway, don't judge Calamar from this, Jedi.
Difficult not to. She initiated comm to the Peacemaker, asked if there were any communications from Tython or elsewhere. There were none.
Next bout's beginning, Tree said,
and this time his distaste was obvious. Perhaps he downed his rough wine to dull his senses. He was becoming more of an enigma than ever. In the pit, a wretched-looking Cathar, naked but for the spiked manacles around his wrists, stood shivering. And as three barred gates were opened, and human-sized, gray-skinned creatures slithered shrieking through curtains of fire, Lannery was reminded of the second time she had saved her brother's life. Heading south across the strafe plains towards Stav Kesh, Lannery hopes that she and Dale will find common ground. Away from Thyre and the silent desert, even she breathes a sigh of relief, though in their time at Qigong Kesh, she made great advances in her understanding of Force skills. She tingles with the Force. Her mind is awash with it. Yet she has to remember her promise to her parents. This journey is as much for Dale as for her. Getting colder, she says.
Good. I like the cold.
Dale is quiet, but when they do talk, she senses no animosity from him. Perhaps he is just thinking things through, trying to settle himself, find balance. I wish mother and father were here, Lannery thinks, because they might be able to make sense of their son. Since leaving Qigong Kesh, he has seemed much more at peace, and she hopes this is a good sign. Their journey to the southern coast of Thyre was an interesting one, meeting people on the way, sharing stories with journeyers undertaking their great journey in the opposite direction, and having the opportunity to see some of Tython's great sights. And once at the coast, the great Cloud Chaser Airport was a wonder to behold. High on the cliffs above the roaring ocean, they sat together to watch several big airships launch, drifting down and out across the ocean in silent majesty. Their turn had come, and the flight south to the tumultuous continent of Cato Zakar had been their last chance to rest. Cato Zakar was often referred to as the Firelands because of its extremes of volcanic activity. But much of this volcanism was located in the continent's heartlands, almost 3,200 kilometers south of the coast where they landed. Their destination was much closer. In the high mountains almost 500 kilometers inland lay Stav Kesh, the Temple of Martial Arts. The strafe plains are a tough, cold environment, wind-swept scrubland prone to frequent localized force storms and scattered with leaning columns of ice-sharp silica and dangerous magma-filled swallow holes that can appear without warning. Molded largely by the elemental force itself, the strafe plains are a manifestation of what draws every living thing together. The Force as a tactile thing. powerful, sharp. As the landscape rises steadily into the high mountains, Lannery remains alert, watching the wildlife of the strafe plains. It's said that the common spinner birds can sense a swallow hole's imminent emergence and that they will fly spirals around any area about to erupt. But it is not a hole that almost kills them both. In places, piles of detritus thrown up from the holes form homes to creatures drawn by the ease of tunneling through loose material. It is from one of these large, uneven mounds that the attack comes. Lannery has never seen a flame taiga, but she's heard of them. When she was a child, she believed them a myth made up by her parents to scare her. As she grew older, she heard stories and saw those few rare hollows made of the elusive creatures. And days before their journey began, their parents warned them both. It bursts from a hidden hollow in the top of the mound, broken trees and shattered stone erupting as it lopes down the slope toward them.
Dale!
Lannery shouts, but he is already stepping forward to meet the beast.
No, Dale, I can...
Shut up! He shouts. He has drawn the old blaster from his belt. The flame taiga is a big one, its length easily twice Lannery's height, its head as high as her shoulder, each of its six heavy paws the size of her head. Fire drips from the tips of its claws and shimmers in the prints it leaves behind. Its scaled, oily hide flexes and reflects the sun in multicolored swaths. Its tail swishes white fire through the air. Its eyes blaze, and its tooth-filled mouth glimmers with heat haze. It is as beautiful as it is deadly. Dale fires when the beast is 30 paces away. It does not even pause. He crouches and shoots again, and Lannery can see the recoil of the old weapon. The taiga grumbles, a splash of blood scorches the air above its shoulder, and it speeds up its attack. Lannery could stop it, she is certain. She has a force punch ready to stun it, and once immobile, she can move forward and cramp the muscles in its legs, breathe the force, and drive so much pain into the creature that it will turn tail and flee. If needs must, she can kill it. But she hesitates. Back in Kigongkesh, she shamed Dale, placing that image of home in his mind when he had not even invited her in. He needs to recover from that. If she defeats the flame taiga for him, it will be just another display of how inadequate he is and how strong she is becoming. So she pauses, but stands ready. Dale dodges sideways and fires almost point blank into the creature's flank. It roars and shakes itself, and he leaps over its back, shooting once more even before he lands. It is athleticism and strength that drives him, not power of the force, but the effect is still the same. The creature is confused and pained. As it swings around to lash out with one huge paw, Dale is already crouched and ready to deliver the final shot into its eye. It rears up, fire shimmering from its claws in searing whips. Dale smiles, pulls the trigger. Nothing happens. As Lannery sees the surprise on Dale's face, the taiga lurches forward and slashes at him with one big paw. Dale is driven sideways, scraping and bumping across the rough ground. Snakes of fire curl around his arms and shoulders. Lannery drives a heavy force punch at the taiga and knocks it onto its side. One eye on Dale. He is writhing on the ground now, rolling to extinguish the flames. She drives another punch into the beast's chest, pushing hard, feeling the force power through her and into the enraged animal. It screams in pain, a surprisingly human sound. Fire erupts from its mouth and hazes the air. Ash falls. One chance, Lannery thinks, and she pauses and pulls back. She keeps her hands raised, readying to throw a heavier, harder shove than she ever has before. For a moment, she meets the creature's gaze, and it understands the pain she can deliver. Go, Lannery says, pushing against the thing's mind even as she speaks. The flame taiga glances once at Dale and then leaps away, bounding around the mound it emerged from, and then disappearing into the distance. Lannery lets out a relieved breath and then goes to Dale.
I could have killed it, he says.
Your blaster misfired, It was almost on you. Lannery is surprised at the anger in his voice. Hurt.
I was fighting it, not you.
I saved you, Dale.
No.
He stands unsteadily, clothing still smoking where he has beaten out the flames. He looks furious and sad at the same time.
No, the Force saved me.
He's shivering now from the burns he has suffered. I can heal those, Lannery thinks.
You might have died.
She's crying silent tears. But Dale only looks bitter.
At least I'd have died free. My own man.
He turns his back on her, and his coolness does more than make her sad. For the first time, her brother scares her.
Chapter 5. Sharp Edges.
It will be the great journey. Journeyers may walk, or ride on beasts, or in mechanical vehicles, but it will be their first self-sustained adventure across Typhon's surface, visiting each temple to learn and refine their talents in the Force. Typhon is a tumultuous place, and our new home still has countless hidden corners and depths unplumbed. Every journeyer will encounter different dangers. Many will find their travels treacherous and troubling, and there are inevitably some who will not survive. But to exist in smooth balance within the Force, one must first confront its sharp edges.
Nordia Graal, first Temple Master of Padawan Kesh. 434 TYA, Thoyor arrival.
I like the sense of floating. For someone like me, it's freeing. Almost like there's nothing to me at all. I sometimes think I'm one of the cloud creatures that live deep within the Obri atmosphere. Huge, immaterial. That's what I sometimes think.
There's speculation, Lannery said. A mystery. No one's ever really seen one.
I know, Kara said. I like the idea of that, too.
Lannery was not sure whether Kara was a poet or a madwoman. Either way, perhaps she would tell Lannery what she had come to discover. After leaving the pits, Lannery and Tree had traveled to the base of this tower. Tree had announced their presence to the sentry system. An air elevator had whisked them up to the 200th floor. The view as they rose was staggering, and they had both stared silently from the clear elevator pod. As Lannery had felt the silvery light of Kalamar's three moons purging the stink of the pits from her skin, she had meditated on the Force, cleansing her mind. She would not forget the smells and sounds and the deaths she had witnessed, but she no longer carried them with her.
"Well, it scares the shack out of me," Tree said.
He was standing close to one of the inner walls, back pressed to it, hands splayed flat. His leku were wrapped protectively around his throat.
"Thank you for seeing us," Lannery said. "I understand you value your privacy."
"I do," Kara said. "But how could I turn down a request from a Jedi Ranger?"
"Many do," Lannery said.
"The system is filled with fools."
Kara glided across the clear crystal floor of her apartment's huge main room and approached a low table that was adorned with all manner of food and drink.
"Refreshments?"
"Water, please." A droid poured, but Kara brought Lannery her drink. This close, the ranger saw just how huge the woman was. She was human, but her immense size made her appear like a different, unique species. She rode on a suspension unit that was hidden by her flowing robe. She was bald, as if her head had outgrown her hair, and where her robe parted, Lannery saw rolls of heavy flab and pale skin. There was a perfume to her that was not unpleasant, but beneath that was her own natural stench. Her arms had been artificially lengthened so that they could reach around her girth. Her face was so bloated that her eyes seemed to stare at each other.
But however freakish she appeared, Lannery knew that she could not underestimate Kara for one moment. Handing the drink to Lannery, Kara held on for just a moment too long, staring into the ranger's eyes.
What?
Lannery asked.
A Jedi so pure, Kara breathed. Forgive me, it's been years.
Those enigmatic words hanging in the air behind her, she floated back to the table and started eating. Lannery took a sip to steady her nerves, looking down at her feet as she swallowed. This large main room of the apartment was cantilevered over the top of the high tower, and its floor was composed of a thin, incredibly clear crystal. It gave the impression of standing on air, and at midnight the view below was staggering. Lights shifted and moved on the ground below, passing along the network of streets and squares surrounding the immense structure. And closer to the floor's underside, the flashing nav beacons of small cloud cruisers and other craft darted back and forth around the tower. Lannery glanced at Tree. He was still at the edge of the room, trying his best not to look down. But he was also close to the door. She thought perhaps it was not only fear that kept him there, but caution. And for the first time, she was grateful for his presence.
You'll know why I'm here, Lannery said.
I will?
My reasons already seem more widely known than I'd like.
Ah, yes. I heard about the attempt on your life.
Is that what it was? Lannery asked.
A Nogri assassin explodes himself close to you? What else could it be?
Unwillingness to be caught, Lannery thought, but she did not reply.
Yet you have me at a disadvantage. I never leave here. I exist for myself and by myself.
I'm sure you have a long reach, Lannery said. She saw Tree breaking a smile behind Kara, but kept her own expression neutral.
I make provisions to know what I need to know, Kara said.
She laughed softly.
I'm very, very rich. My businesses run themselves, but I still feed off information. It's my obsession, and the only true universal currency.
Stargazers, Lannery said. She watched for any reaction, but other than a slight pause before replying, Kara gave nothing away.
I know of them. Little to do with me.
You fund them?
I donate. They're a charitable cause.
A sect of madmen, Tree said.
Only to those who don't understand.
You'd seek to leave the system? Lannery asked.
You wouldn't?
No. Lannery shook her head, confused. A strange question. This is home. Kara stared at her, and for an instant Lannery felt something strange, as if an outside consciousness were scratching at the wall of her mind. Then the feeling was gone. But she tried to grab hold of it, analyze. It was like nothing she had ever felt before.
Have you ever been to Fury's Gate?
No, Lannery said.
I have,
Kara said.
Many years ago, before I became like this, I was quite a traveler. It's a minimum of 300 days to reach that small planet, and not many make the journey. There's really no reason to go there. But I felt the need, the urge to push my boundaries. I've always felt that way, and I've done so physically as well as mentally. Even my appearance is a product of that urge. I spent 20 days there at Fury Station, and most of the time I simply looked out into the deep core. Out beyond anything anyone in the Tython system knows. I wanted to see the glimmer of a sleeper ship returning. One of those craft sent out over the millennia to return to the wider galaxy. I wanted to travel onward myself, but knew that death would likely be the result. But even since turning my back on Fury Station and returning here, I have continued to look outward.
Gazing at the stars, Lannery said,
and she remembered so much about her young brother. His anger that their ancestors had been brought to Typhon. His wishes. His interests. They had never been her own. And yet, there had always been that place inside her, the troubling presence of dark and light, dancing their own fight.
"I'm not ashamed of it," Kara said. "Many in the system look outward. Most only in their dreams, because day-to-day life doesn't allow otherwise. But me, I'm rich. I can invest."
"So you give the Stargazers money to seek a way to leave?" Kara shrugged, and her immense body shivered and shook with waves of flab. "You know my brother."
"Brother?"
Her confusion seemed genuine. "Dalian Brock." That shuddering shrug again.
"Honestly, I've never even met them. I fund several of their small temples around Kalamar, give them somewhere to meet and talk. I pay for their contemplations."
She turned away from Lannery, perhaps to lie.
"They are only one of my interests."
Lannery tried to touch Kara's mind, but could not. The woman was a riot of feelings, thoughts, sensations. And if there was sense in that white noise, Lannery could not find it.
"They're more than just a project to you," Lannery said. "I'm a dreamer with money," Kara said.
"So you fund them out of pure philanthropy?"
"Yes."
Kara continued grazing at the table, eating. Such dainty amounts for a woman so huge. "I hear of Gree technology," Lannery said. Again, she watched for a reaction. Again, that strange scratching at her mind. Perturbed, she reached out, trying to sense who or what might be trying to read her. But there was nothing. Perhaps the feeling really did come from the inside. Maybe such questions were touching hidden desires planted there all those years ago by her younger brother's interests. However much she tried, she could not deny her fascination with what had come before Typhon. Kara glanced at her and then started eating some more. "The Gree," Lannery pressed. The woman turned her back on Lannery once more and settled closer to the table, her hover system gently touching the crystal floor. She sighed heavily, seeming to change shape within her clothes. Her shoulders relaxed.
"I'm tired. Your audience is over. Speak to the Stargazers if you must. Their nearest temple is in the eastern quarter of the Kar Peninsula, an old abandoned Dibendu temple that I own. Now leave."
"I haven't finished," Lannery said. "Typhon, the whole system might be in terrible danger from what your Stargazers are doing."
"Leave,"
Kara continued eating. And just for a moment, Lannery recognized something about her. A manner, a presence, a bearing.
"You're Jedi?" Lannery gasped.
It seemed amazing, and yet it would explain that strange, insistent scratching at her mind. The shadow of Bogan passed across Lannery's mind, and she was even more confused.
"Once," Kara said, laughing bitterly. "But no more. The Force is stale within me. Now leave, Ranger. I have my security, and they're the best money can buy."
"And now suddenly she threatens me," Lannery thought. A cough, a thud, and Kara slid over onto her side, rolling from the hover platform and seeming to spill across the floor. Breath rattled in her throat.
"What have you..." "She's out, that's all."
Tree was holding a small weapon in one hand, barely the size of a finger. Stun tube. It carried one charge, but was effective for several hours. Or maybe less for someone of this size. He raised an eyebrow.
"So now that you've spoken with her, do you want to find everything she wasn't telling us?"
"You'll bring her guards down on us." Lannery looked around the large room. She could not help partly agreeing with Tree's actions. And whether she liked it or not, the time for talk was over. "Now that it's done, we won't have long."
They started searching. Tree was haphazard, pulling open cupboards and throwing aside cushions from the several huge low seats that lay around the place. But Lannery tried to concentrate her efforts. She let the force flow and sought where a Jedi might hide her secrets. Was she once really Jedi? She wondered. Or did she merely say that to confuse me? Kara was a player of games, that was for sure, answering some questions and dodging others. She seemed very open about her desires and ambitions. Yet there was still a mystery to her, and something far deeper and more complex than this fat woman confined to her own apartment. Rich she might be, and powerful, and she undoubtedly had a long reach. But Lannery's recognition of something about her, something Jedi, was even more confusing. There were some who trained with the Jedi but then left Tython. It was usually at the Padawan phase, when children once strong with the Force seemed to lose that strength as they reached adulthood. There was no shame to it. And the Jedi themselves admitted that on occasion they might make mistakes and take into training those who would never be comfortable and at balance with the Force. My brother, for one, Lannery thought. She stared at the slumped figure of Kara, rich benefactor of the Stargazers, and wished she could ask her more.
Hurry, Tree said. The sentries might be coming even now.
Why would they?
Like she said, the best security that money can buy. They'll have sensors for weapon discharges.
Oh, great, Lannery said. More conflict was the last thing she wanted here. Her brief time on Kalamar had already been more eventful than she had hoped. She looked down past her feet at the ground far below. A chaos of lights swarmed around the base of the tower, but there were three white lights rising quickly up the tower's outer wall. Air elevators. She touched her collar and activated her comm. Ironhulks, I need you to bring the ship. We're on the 200th floor of Gaz Spire, 8 kilometers southeast of the landing tower. Nothing. Did you hear me? Ironhulks answered, a splutter of static and groans. As usual, he sounded like an old man being woken from a comfortable sleep, but she already heard the background whine of the Peacemaker's engines being prepped. What? Tree asked. Company. We'll be leaving soon. His wide-eyed fear could not have been feigned.
Leaving how?
Let's worry about that when the time comes. Now search. Lannery turned and faced the wide panoramic windows looking out over Rahol Yon Archipelago, trying to relax, remembering her force skills training and relishing the balance she could feel inside. Darkness and light. Seeing and seeking. She surveyed the vast room, looking for where something might be hidden. A woman like Kara had plenty to hide, and not all of it the currency of secrets. She was a rich woman, with a grand apartment and material wealth. She would have things to hide, too. At the far corner of the room was a wall display of martial objects, blades, spears, maces, other striking weapons, all of them powered by the bearer alone. It did not surprise Lannery that Kara might be a collector of such antiquities, and they did not interest her. What might be behind the display did. There was no obvious door, but she sensed a hollow beyond the wall. And she did not have time to find the hidden opening mechanism. Lannery drew her sword and struck. Sparks flew, and an intense surge of energy webbed across the display of old weapons, lighting them briefly with the Force. She struck again, and a wall panel gave way. Several crossbows clattered to the floor. Lannery shouldered her way through the opening into the narrow space behind the wall.
Those elevators are pretty close, Tree called.
Lock the doors, barricade them, give us as much time as you can. Her voice sounded muffled in the small unlit room, as if swallowed by something soft. Lannery took a small glow rod from her belt and flicked it on. The light flooded the room, and seeing what was in there gave context to the curious, musty smell. Books. Perhaps a dozen of them, each sitting on a plinth in a separate display case.
It had been a long time since she'd even seen a book. Her parents had one, an old instruction tome written by the great Jedi Master Shalmar more than 3 millennia ago, and they showed it to her whenever she asked. She loved the printing, the care and attention that went into the production processes. But these... She opened the first case, caught a whiff of must and age, and as she opened the book, she realized that it was unique. Not printed. Not mass-produced. This was handwritten. Tree's voice called, muffled by the wall between them.
They're outside!
Lannery knew they did not have very long. Ironholgs, how far away are you? Her droid replied that the Peacemaker was moments away. Good. Drop low, wait until you see me, then come in close. A quizzical buzz from the comm. Don't worry, you won't be able to miss us. Opening the rest of the display cases, she winced at the damage she might be doing to these books. But time was not on her side. Flipping pages, her heart settling, yet her mind moving faster than ever, at last she found what she was looking for. She slipped the thin book into her jacket and left the room. Quickly! Tree whispered. He was in the center of the large room, standing on one of the low seating areas so that he did not have to look down. Lannery thought he was actually shaking with fear, his leku touching nervously beneath his chin. Kara groaned, her bulk shifting in a sickly, fluid movement. A comm link on the table beside her was glowing softly, call unanswered. Her security would already know that something was very wrong. Lannery dashed across to the wide, tall windows and beckoned Trisana after her.
There?
He asked. You think we can leave any other way? Something crashed against the wide doors, 3 heavy impacts. A low table that Tree had upended against the door tilted and fell, smacking against the crystal floor. Lannery squinted through the window at the sea of lights below and around them, and then she saw the shape she wanted. She breathed a sigh of relief.
Battle droids,
Tree said, arriving by her side.
All the rich hire them. Private security get them chipped and reprogrammed, more heavily armed. Some of them fought in the Despot War. I've even heard that some retain memories of their battles with the Jedi. Don't like them, hate them, and some even dream of...
You're babbling, Lannery said. Androids don't dream.
I told you I don't like heights.
More impacts from beyond the room. And then a louder, deeper thud vibrated through the floor, and the doors burst open in a blast of smoke, flame, and torn metal. Lannery drew her sword again and faced the door. 3 droids entered, short, thin units designed for speed and offering narrow targets for any aggressor to hit. Their fist-sized heads twirled as they scanned the room. Lannery pressed her hand to Tree's chest to still him, and she felt his heart hammering against her palm. And then, without warning, the droids opened fire. Lannery swept her sword left and right, catching and deflecting blasts from their weapons. Tree shrank down behind her. She concentrated, her stance perfectly balanced, and with her free hand, she force-punched a droid back against the wall. It struck, fell, and then quickly rose again. It was scarred with several old blast injuries. Battle-hardened.
Get ready,
Lannery shouted.
For what?
You'll know when it happens. She angled the sword and deflected several blasts back against the window. Crystal shattered, and a large slab of the window burst outward with a heavy crump. Wind whistled into the room, sweeping food-laden plates from the table, and Lannery saw Kara's eyes flicker open. Sword still shifting before her, Lannery clawed her left hand, lifting 1 droid and flinging it at another. A blast caught it and it blew apart. A brief shriek of tortured metal, followed by a hail of white-hot components ricocheting around the room. Lannery knew she didn't have much time. She could force-jump across the room and take on the 2 remaining battle droids, but right then, destroying them was not the priority. The priority was escape. She turned, grabbed Tree around the waist, and leaped from the shattered window. The wind stole her breath. It grabbed them and spun them around as they spiraled down from Kara's overhanging apartment, drawing them in close to the tower so that windows flitted by in a blur. It roared in her ears.
Lannery squinted, ignoring Tree's scream of terror as they plummeted, struggling to hold him. Laser blasts flashed by them, and there was nothing she could do. No way she could gather her thoughts to protect them from the sustained fire coming from the shattered window above. She only hoped... The Peacemaker drifted from the shadow of the tower and dipped below them, dropping, engines roaring, matching their speed so that the impact as they struck its upper surface was as gentle as possible. Lannery grunted and clasped Tree as they hit, flailing with her other hand that still held the sword. Given a choice of which to drop, she knew the weapon would win out, but she hoped she did not have to make that choice. Laser blasts ricocheted from the ship's curved hull, but Ironhold's remote piloted the ship perfectly. They flew a gentle circle around the tower, so that the droids could no longer hit them with fire from above. Then the craft hovered to give them the chance to get inside. Peacemaker's top hatch whispered open. "After you," Lannery said. Tree scrambled across the ship's smooth back and tipped inside head first. Lannery dropped in beside Tree, landing softly on her feet, and the hatch closed above her. At home once more, she hardly even swayed as the ship powered away from Rahul Yawn and out across the dark sea. "Are you mad?" Tree shouted. "Insane? What if your ship hadn't been there? What if..." She raised one hand, silencing him, and took a deep, calming breath. A simple thank you would be fine. With the Peacemaker's computers patched into Calamar's navsats and the ship flying across the ocean toward the Kar Peninsula, Lannery wanted to use the time to take stock. At first, Trisana tried to talk, but she held up a finger in warning and nodded at her cot. "Sit. Still. Quiet. You're on my ship now. It was easy getting you on board. It'd be even easier for me to fling you off."
"You call that easy?"
he spat. "The cot. And silence." Tree sat, his leku so pale they were almost pink. He was all front, but Lannery could see his relief at having a chance to rest. She turned the cockpit seat toward the front, and sat back for a moment, staring at the sea flashing by below. Moonlight caught the waves. Ship's lanterns speckled the surface, and here and there, the navigation lights of airborne craft moved across the night. It was clear, and a swath of stars smeared the sky. Her ancestors had come from somewhere out there, and now her brother was preparing to risk everything to travel there once again. Her brother and others. Lannery was aware of the dreadful danger Dale's efforts might be putting Tython and the wider system in, and it chilled her to even imagine him getting close to his aims. But at moments like this, looking up at the stars, she could not hold back her interest, her fascination. In many ways, she was as curious as anyone about their origins, but she went about feeding that curiosity in different ways. Kara had appeared quite open about her affiliation with the Stargazers. Her Jedi past was a mystery, especially as she now exuded dislike for their society and beliefs. If the information she'd imparted was correct, she had willingly sent them to a Stargazer temple, and perhaps one step closer to Dale. Yet she had also been hiding secrets. Lannery had brought one of them with her. Quietly, she took the book from her jacket and placed it on the control panel before her. She sensed no movement from Tree. If he so much as stood from the cot in the living area behind her, she would be aware, and she did not need any Jedi senses to know this. The Peacemaker ship was as much her home as the one with her parents had ever been, and she knew every waft of air, every creak of loose paneling, and every shadow cast by the ceiling lights or control panel indicators. She was safer here than anywhere. The book was leather-bound, its cover worn around the edges, and blank. It was thin, perhaps 50 pages. Age emanated from it, a combination of its hand-worn appearance, the faint smell of dust, and the mere fact that it was a book of paper, card, and ink. There were those who still produced books, but only as novelty or special items. This was the real thing.
How many have touched this? She wondered. How many have stared at it as I am now, readying themselves to see inside?
Haunted by history, the scent of lost times, the feel of ages, it represented something that no flat screen or hollow display ever could.
She opened the cover and looked at the first page.
The little that was printed there was in a strange symbology she only faintly recognized. She ran her fingertips across the page and felt grittiness beneath them. The dust of ages. Stroking a pad on the arm of her seat, she listened for Tree as a small globe rose from the Peacemaker's control panel. He was silent and still. Lannery picked up the globe and twisted it to aim at the book. It floated beside her right cheek, and when she touched the pad again, it flickered on and started to hum softly. A faint blue light splashed on the book, and beneath it the symbols started to shiver. It took longer than she had expected. The print seemed to flow and shift, though only within the globe's blue light, and at last, the shimmering settled into words she could read. The Gree, and everything I have found of them in the old city. The name below was Osamael Orr. And that name rang in Lannery's memory. Frowning, she leaned back in her seat and closed her eyes to concentrate. Who was it? Where did she know that name from? She looked again, out at the stars, so far away from everything she knew and loved, and the concept of exploration came to her. What was she, if not an explorer? A ranger of the Jedi, a traveler of this system that still contained countless unknowns, even though it had been inhabited for 10,000 years. There was so much more to know. Mysteries, confusions, ambiguities. There are depths, she whispered. These, too, were the words of Osamael Orr, and she remembered where she had heard them before. A bedtime story from her father, told so long ago and never remembered again until now. Even after everything that had happened with her and Dale, the Jedi temples, the search, and what she had found of him. Even then, she had not thought of that time almost 20 years before, when her father sat in the chair beside her bed, long hair loosened to flow across his shoulders, hands folded on his chest, as he relayed the cautionary tale of Osamael Orr and his final greatest adventure in the depths of the old city, where he insisted there were secrets still to be found. So he embarked on his next expedition alone, because by then no one wanted to go with him anymore. They said he was mad. They said there were more important things to do across Tython, and that the surroundings were too dangerous. This was 9,000 years ago, you have to remember. Back at a time when dreadful force storms still ravaged the planet, and the Jedi were sometimes swept along with them, instead of taking power and balance from them. There were many like Osamael Orr back then. Frontiersmen, they called themselves. But for Osamael Orr, the greatest frontiers did not necessarily exist at the greatest distances. So he went down into the old city on Tulse alone. And he was never seen again. They searched for him. His family felt a sense of responsibility, though they thought him mad as everyone else. So they looked. But nothing was ever found, and no one was willing to go deep. There are depths, Osamael had told his sister the night before he went, and she repeated his final words whenever anyone asked her about her brother, because she was the one member of the family who insisted he was still alive. He's still exploring down there, in those depths, she'd say. He's going deeper and finding more, and one day he'll emerge with news that will astound us all. But he never did come back. And that's why the old city is such a dangerous place, my sweet Lannery. Because there are depths. Osamael Orr's diary, Lannery whispered, awed. For her to be holding this now, 9,000 years later, he must have come back. A chill went through her,
as if someone from a great distance touched the deepest part of her and knew her. She turned the page and started reading. Chapter 6. Old Myths.
No one can fight without balance.
Master Roop, Stav Kesh, 8,466 TYA, though your arrival. Stav Kesh. The name itself inspires a shiver of anticipation, a frisson of excitement. For Lannery, Qigong Kesh was a place of contemplation and immersion in Force skills, nursing and nurturing them, and considering what the Force meant to her. At the martial arts temple of Stav Kesh, she will learn to fight. It is dawn as Lannery and Dale approach the temple. They'd camped several kilometers to the north, and breaking camp when the sun rose above the eastern horizon is an incredible moment. The air here is thin, the mountains high, and they are both dizzy with breathlessness. But the thin air seems to purify the amazing colors of dawn. Dale seems excited. He was always good in a fight, as several arguments with the children of other Jedi at Bodhi Temple had proved. Lannery hopes that he will find the Force here and truly welcome it at last. When he sees what it can do, when he feels how it might help.
"This is my time," he says as they stand on a rocky cliff path, a shallow ravine to their right.
Snow had fallen in the night, and a light covering softens their harsh surroundings.
"Don't try to be my teacher here, Lannery. And don't try to be mother and father. You're my sister, that's all. Whatever happens to me here is my responsibility."
"Our parents made you my responsibility."
"We're not children anymore. And I'm my own man."
It's a surprising thing for Dale to say. But as he walks ahead of her toward the temple, and she sees the strength in his stance and the determined set of his shoulders, it does not seem ridiculous at all. The breeze is picking up. Snow dances through the air. The landscape is harsh, weather likewise. Lannery knows that Stav Kesh is never an easy place to be.
"My name is Tave, and I'm one of the masters of the temple. We've been expecting you. How was your journey south from the sea?"
"No problems," Dale says.
He does not mention the fire taiga, and when Master Tave glances at the healing burns across his forearms, Dale says nothing. After a brief pause, the Nogri master smiles.
"Good. Wait here, and I'll send a droid to show you to your quarters. You have the morning to perform breathing exercises, acclimatize to the altitude. After lunch, your training begins. This afternoon, Force breathing."
"Breathing?" Dale says. "I thought this was the martial arts temple."
Master Tave stares at Dale, glances at Lannery, then turns his back on them both.
"Dale," Lannery whispers, "don't be rude."
"Rude?"
he asks, but at least he's keeping his voice low.
"But don't you think Master Tave knows what he's doing?"
"Yes, well, but breathing?"
"I'm sure it'll all make sense."
She walks past Dale and between the wide temple doors, suddenly afraid that they will swing closed and shutter outside. Perhaps this is how Dale sometimes feels, she thinks. Her brother follows her inside, and together they take in their surroundings. She has seen plenty of hollows of Stav Kesh, and heard many stories from those journeyers who visited there before Bodhi Temple in their own great journeys of learning. But nothing could have prepared her for the real thing. The strength of the Force, for a start. Lannery can feel the Force here as an almost physical presence. Ashlaw and Bogan exerting a gravity upon her that seems to stretch, pull in all directions, and give her body an incredible lightness. It is easy to let herself fall into the flow, and the talents she honed at Qigong Kesh feel even more refined here. The Force is close, and it takes so little effort to become one with it. She glances at Dale. He is looking about him in wonder, and she hopes that some of it is recognition of the Force. But after what he said outside, she will not ask him. Stav Kesh does not so much cling to the mountainside as form it. Rocky outcroppings are visible here and there, but most of what Lannery can see above her are buildings. They start at her level and rise up the slope of the mountain, projecting out over heavy buttresses and elsewhere forming sheer cliffs of smooth gray stone. Windows pock wide facades, and balconies held up by slender, incredibly strong supports stretch out over long drops. Canvas window shades are already flapping in the dawn breeze, lending splashes of a dozen colors to the sandstone city. A waterfall tumbles from high above, leaving glittering icicles on the buildings and rocks it passes by. A series of wheels are driven by the fast-moving water. Spray hazes the air, and the newborn sun casts several rainbows across illuminated parts of the city. As Lannery watches the sunline move around the mountain's girth, the rainbows seem to be driving shadows before them. The scene is beautiful, and she remembers at last to draw a breath. On the mountainside below them sits the Tho-Yor. They passed it on their ascent, mysterious, enigmatic, and the recent snowfall coated it with a glittering layer.
"Bet our room's right at the top," Dale says.
Lannery laughs, more than the comment warrants, because she is so pleased at hearing even a hint of humor from her brother. A floating droid arrives and utters their names in an electronic buzz. They follow. By the time they reach their quarters, Dale is laughing hard and panting and perhaps crying just a little.
1,300, he says, gasping. I lost count of the steps after that.
Good training, Lannery gasps. They glance into their room. Beds, benches, little else. Their training robes are laid on the beds, and she can already tell how rough they are and how cold they will be wearing them. Toughening us up, she thinks. She asks the droid where their afternoon session will take place.
Master Tave always takes his classes in the lower training levels,
the droid burrs. Of course he does, Lannery says. Of course.
Attack me, Master Tave says. With anything you can.
The students are hesitant. Even Lannery pauses, though she knows that the master will not suggest anything he does not mean. Then she walks to the weapons rack, picks up a slingshot, and fires a stone at the master's head. He steps aside, and it misses. She pushes a force punch his way, and he deflects it with a flick of his fingers. Lannery dashes to the left, and her sudden movement seems to bring the room to life. There are 6 journeyers in the training courtyard, including her and Dale, and they take her enthusiasm as permission to attack. The Cathar twins go at Master Tave with heavy, spiked chains that he easily avoids, leaving them tangled and useless. Dale darts in low and fast, swinging a mace at his legs, which are no longer there. Tave shoves Dale onto his back and kicks the mace aside. A Wookiee roars and swings 2 short, heavy clubs that Master Tave ducks and swerves around before planting a boot in the Wookiee's rump and sending her spilling to the floor. The last student to attack is a Twi'lek, who fires a force punch so powerful that it even takes Lannery's breath away. Master Tave deflects the punch back against its originator, and the Twi'lek staggers back with a bloodied nose. The large courtyard rings with their heavy breathing, their bodies still unused to the thin air. The fight drives their hearts, pumps blood, sharpens senses. But it is far from over.
Again,
Master Tave says. He is not even breathing hard. This time, Lannery, Dale, and the Wookiee attack simultaneously from 3 different directions, gasping, grunting. Lannery trying to sweep Tave's legs from beneath him with a sly force punch. Dale aiming a flying kick at his head. The Wookiee clumsy yet strong with her deadly clubs. And within moments, they are all on the floor, clasping bruises and wallowing in wounded pride. Lannery and Dale lock eyes, and her brother grins. They go again. The courtyard is a confusion of spilled bodies and bloodied noses and swirling snow. And as Lannery is casually cast aside for the 3rd time, she sees the Twi'lek go at Master Tave with a surprisingly adept combination of all Chaka moves, the vigorous force martial art.
Tave seems to never be where a punch lands or a foot kicks. And moments later, the Twi'lek spins through the air toward a far wall. The master raises a hand and softens the flying boy's impact. Lannery is sweating even in her thin robe, her heart racing, breathing hard. Deo looks the same, but he also appears more alive than he has in a while. It's good to see him like that, but worrying too. Each of his attacks was traditional. Not once did he try to channel the Force.
"You all try too hard," Master Tave says.
He walks among them with his hands behind his back, and there's no sign at all that he has expended any strength in holding off their attacks.
"You give in to effort, and let it rule your moves."
He points at the Cathar twins.
"You both held your breath as you attacked, and your hearts will not like that."
At the Wookiee.
"A roar will not distract an enemy strong with the Force, but it will steal your breath, empty your lungs, tire you quicker."
And at Lannery.
"And you. You stumble rather than flow. With every move, you expend 3 times the energy you should."
He stands in the middle of the scattered, panting, bleeding students and sighs.
"So, breathing."
For the rest of that afternoon, Master Tave teaches them how to breathe. To begin with, it feels unnatural and goes against everything Lannery thought she knew, because breathing is something she never thinks about. She's done it forever. It simply happens, like her heart beating, her blood flowing, her mind working both when she is awake and asleep. But by the time they stop at mid-afternoon for drinks and a handful of local fruit and nuts, she realizes the truth. Tave is showing them how to breathe with the Force, as well as with air. Perhaps later she will have to revisit her heart, her blood, her thinking. The students enjoy the session, but Lannery does not allow herself to draw too close to the others. Usually gregarious and willing to make friends, she feels the pressure of her responsibility for Dale. And now that he has emphasized his independence from her and their parents, that pressure feels even greater. Dale also remains somewhat aloof. He's enjoying the training, she can see that, but he is also selective about what he is taking from it. The more Master Tave tells them that the Force is their friend, their protector, the balance that they must find, the more she perceives Dale's attention wandering. Perhaps he's simply way out of balance, she thinks. And once she grasps this idea, Lannery lets it grow. It's uncomfortable, but something she understands, something that can be resolved. In her mind, it's far better than the alternative. That Dale truly hates the Force and is doing everything he can to tear himself away from it.
"Your first training session in Stavkesh is almost at an end,"
Master Tave says later that afternoon.
"This evening you will prepare food, scrub the kitchens, and then return here to clear the training yard of snow and mud. You might also visit the Thor-Yo and meditate for a while. Meditation is a part of fighting, centering yourself, finding and ensuring your balance. And so, attack me once more, with everything you can."
This time there is little hesitation. Lannery and Dale are the first to react. Lannery uses the Force to send a piercing whistle at Master Tave's ears, upsetting his physical balance. But her follow-up attack with an Alchaka kick combination is parried and countered, and her face meets the stone pavement. She feels her nose gush blood, the second time that day, and rolls onto her side in time to see Dale spinning through the air, victim of a Force punch from Tave. The others attack too, using combinations of the Force and the physical. This time, there is no panting and roaring, groaning and grunting, and the only sounds echoing across the courtyard are the rustling of loose robes, the whisper of bare feet on snow-covered stone, the impacts of flesh against flesh. Master Tave stands tall and fights off every attack. His expression remains impassive, and his movements are fluid and confident. It is Dale who scores the first and only hit of the day, with Tave warding off a sword attack from the Cathar twins.
Dale feints a clumsy Alchaka assault, but then slides within Tave's reach and delivers an elbow to his face. Master Tave takes a step back, and his head turns to the side, spots of blood splashing his shoulder. The courtyard grows suddenly still. Dale lowers his elbow, rubbing it slightly from where it contacted Tave's heavy brow. There is a stunned silence. Master Tave smiles.
"Good," he says. "Very good, Dalian."
He slings one arm over Dale's shoulder and presses one clawed finger against his chest.
"You're learning to breathe well, deep and gentle from the stomach instead of the chest. You're learning to control your body instead of letting your body control you. Now imagine what you could do if you were willing to let in the force."
The silence in the courtyard goes from stunned to awkward. Dale says nothing. But Lannery can read his expression and his thoughts as he looks at Master Tave's bruised temple. Who needs the force?
He let you get the hit.
No, of course he did. That's Master Tave. You think he'd be fooled by a move more suited to a tavern scrap?
He was tired. He let his guard slip. I got him. I hit him.
Dale is angry. She can see that. But Lannery cannot let him believe something like this. It will only add impetus to his fleeing the Force.
I've heard stories about him. He can hide in the Force, slip away, come back again.
She smiles softly.
He wanted to let you gain confidence. You were the clumsiest of all of us there, and he didn't want you...
Are you serious? Dale asks. Don't treat me like a child, Lannery. I might be younger than you, but I see more. I know more truths. And the truth is, strength doesn't only come from your stupid force.
My force?
Dale snorts. They are high up on the wild, windswept top of the temple. It's night, and the views over the plains are amazing. But Dale looks at the sky.
None of this is for me, he says,
and he sounds almost wistful.
None of this down here.
Even as Lannery walks away, Dale is still gazing at the stars. For a long while, Lannery stared up at the night sky. Alone out in the Tython system, she sometimes sat staring at the stars, letting the Peacemaker fly itself, and wondering what was out there. It was part of the reason why being a ranger suited her. One day she would advance to master, and then perhaps she would spend more of her time on Tython, contemplating the Force, instructing and guiding others, and eventually becoming an Elder Jedi. But youthful curiosity still drove her, and being alone in space, she had the time to dream. Besides, she liked the adventure. In that regard, perhaps she and her brother were alike. She glanced back into the living area and saw that Trisana was asleep. A pang of annoyance hit her that he slept so easily on her cot. But it was the best place for him right now. As they powered across the Calamar Sea toward the Kar Peninsula, Lannery needed to report in. There was much to tell. She lowered the volume on the flat screen and then keyed in Master Dam Powell's code. The soft chiming went on for some time, and then the screen flickered, and Dam Powell's face appeared.
Ranger Brock,
Dam Powell said. She looked as though she had been asleep.
I wasn't expecting to hear from you so soon.
Master Dam Powell, Lannery said, bowing her head briefly. I have a quiet moment, and there is progress. Troubling progress. After the brief time delay, the Jedi Master heard her words and appeared suddenly more alert. My brother Dalian is aware that I'm pursuing him, Lannery said. He has his spies, and they followed me from the moment...